Time now, finally, to look back on what is a largely completed offseason for the Western Conference. We're going to go in alphabetical order, starting with Dallas, ending with Utah. We're sponsored today by Audible. Get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial at audible.com/capspace. Okay, let's get right to it, Danny. The Dallas Mavericks, why don't we just talk about what they did here before we give them a grade?
So the biggest thing that they did was drafting Dennis Smith in the first round. They also decided to stay over the cap, which was a surprise, and so they traded AJ Hammonds, and they actually had a trade exception from the Andrew Bogut deal, so they used that. They traded Hammonds to the Heat. In exchange, they got a future second round pick and Josh McRoberts and a bunch of cash. They basically paid most of his contract to eat that salary. And then the other big thing that they did, well, they re-signed Dirk, about $5 million a year with a team option for the second year. And then we still don't know with Nerlens. Nerlens Noel is still a restricted free agent hanging out there on a very, very thin market.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. That McRoberts trade, I liked that one for them because Hammonds, I looked at him as dead money. He was 24, did not play well in the D-League last year and had a third year guaranteed on his contract, which actually was about $1.5 million, maybe a little bit more than that, whatever the minimum was for 2018. It seems like the plan here is a cogent one. Sticking with this developing young core, they got Smith, which they're happy with. They're talked that they would get into the point guard market. Now with adding him, they believe that no longer was necessary. And taking on McRoberts, probably can't play anymore, but the money for this year doesn't matter. And they get that 2023 second rounder. They get the cash, which is $5.1 million, as much as Miami could possibly send. The second rounder being 2023, you have to discount it, of course, because it's so far away, but who knows where Miami will be at that time. And this is one of those teams that actually can look that far ahead because they have had such a stable ownership and management and coaching group. So I think they're not necessarily going to try and compete, although I think they could be better than some people think this season. They have now begun to put together a nice young core, assuming, of course, that they can get Noel to come back. A lot of this is still incomplete, as we've seen with some of these teams here. You know, if they really overpay him, this grade goes down. If they can get him on a long-term deal, it goes up. If he takes the qualifying offer and then he can leave next summer, it goes down. They got to find that good middle ground with him, and it seems like the standoff could drag on.
One other thing I wanted to note is that while choosing to likely use cap space in 2018 as opposed to 2017 is largely a good idea just because there are so few teams that will have money then. It is more precarious because of Wes Matthews. He is a big part of why they would have space, and he has a player option that he could just pick up and that would change it. And I'm not sure if there would be a market for it, because probably him picking it up would mean that he disappointed this year. So then you might not find a team to take on that. You might have to throw some assets. Granted, they have the assets to throw at it. And there were some good contracts this year. I was thinking about them as a potential like Jonathan Simmons suitor or something like that. And so I do think that it was the right decision, but it was a closer call for them than others. But then at the same point, the argument that you can make is other than the Lakers and maybe a few other interesting teams that have space, they won't have to be competing for max level guys the way that they did a few years ago when it was the wide open markets and they were falling just short all these times.
Yeah, that's a great point there. Dirk getting him to sign on for $5 million, a team option then for next year, which they probably will decline on him to see where he ends up. But still, I mean, the fact that they've been able to get him to buy into this organization. And remember, he could be giving them the Kobe Bryant right now, where he'd be demanding the max until the very moment he retires. He's not doing that. They have worked out an arrangement with him through their culture, whether it's through something a little bit more untoward than that. Future arrangements, we'll never know that. But I agree. And even if Wes Matthews opts in, as of now, they should have $33 million in space for next year. Obviously, whatever Noel gets will come out of that. They also would need to re-sign Seth Curry at that time, should they want to. I went ultimately for them with an A-. What do you think of that?
I don't like that we agree. I gave them exactly the same grade because it was a phenomenal offseason, and something that I'm trying to do this year is focus more on the big stuff than the small stuff. And the biggest things they got right. Dennis Smith was the best pick available to them, and I don't give them as huge a burst because he was the right guy. It's just like if you pick the right guy at number one, I'm not going to give you a huge burst, but they did it, and that's great. And then they were patient with everything else, and they were one of the few teams that actually exhibited that, didn't add on bad contracts. And one small thing before we move on with them is the Seth Curry part of this. So Seth will be an unrestricted free agent next year, but they will have early bird rights on him, which means that depending on what they're going to pay him, they could use use a cap, they could use an exception, or they could use cap space. But if they're a cap space team, they you know, so it'll depend on the price he gets. But I think that what they've done has set up a lot of flexibility for next year. They just have to do something with it.
Yeah, maybe you could make the argument that an A minus is too high, because who the hell else were they going to take there besides Dennis Smith? You know, they weren't going to take.
But
Zach,
I mean,
Collins.
The same thing. I mean, we had argued for him to be taken by other teams, and they didn't do it.
Right.
So I mean, I think that you have to give them credit for and for also for giving him the keys. And while some point guards got reasonable contracts this year, a lot of other ones didn't. And oh, that was one demerit too that we didn't talk about, was I don't understand why Devin Harris is still on this team. I mean, you could say that it's not that when they stayed over the cap, the opportunity cost was a lot lower.
I think that is what it would have been. Say, actually, yeah.
But they still, like, I want to see how they use these last couple roster spots, because they still need a little bit more kind of like rotation level depth at, I would say, the forward spots, maybe even at the two. They're not terrible at any of those, but I just would like to see a little bit more, because they have just a ton of point guards.
Yeah, but Carlisle at least will play those point guards together a lot, so you can get some more use out of it that way. We'll move on to the Denver Nuggets, see what we thought of them adding Paul Millsap. But first, this from Audible. Thank you to them for supporting today's show. I have actually used Audible since 2005, and I've listened to countless books. I love to just relax, listen to some sci-fi, some great books I've listened to recently on Audible, a great series called The Three Body Problem. It's definitely pretty dense, but Audible always has great readers to help you through that type of stuff. Really one of the more unique science fiction books that I've read. It's by Chinese writer named Liu Cixin, who I am not pronouncing correctly, no doubt. But I really recommend that one, and I recommend Audible in general. They also have this Whisper Sync technology in concert with Amazon, where if you have a book on your Kindle, you're up late reading the night before, you don't want to go to bed. You know, we all stay up way too late reading a great book, but at some point you have to go to bed. But this way, when you get in the car to go to work the next day, you can just pick up right where you left off, automatically listening in Audible in your car, on the train, or however it is that you're listening. So when you get started with Audible and their unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, and business information providers, you can get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial at audible.com/capspace. That URL /capspace, easy to remember because all of our promo codes involve it in some fashion or another. audible.com/capspace for a free audiobook with your 30-day trial. Okay, Danny, I would like to just hear your grade first. What did you have for the Denver Nuggets?
I gave them an A minus. And do you want an explanation, or do you want to save that?
Yeah, I would. I'm imagining you're going to say, hey, they got the big stuff right, and so you're giving them most of the credit there.
Those are the first five words of the part I wrote for the analysis. Yeah, I mean, and the big, not only did they get Millsap, but they did it on a team-friendly deal. I had Denver in the mock-off season. I had Millsap going to Denver, but the contract they got him for was way better than I negotiated, and that's huge. But the minus comes from the way they did everything else. And you could easily slide this to like a B plus or a B. I just really like Millsap and his fit with this team and the contract he got. But not only trading down in the draft just for Trey Lyles, but using that pick on Tyler Lydon, like the downgrade from Donovan Mitchell to Tyler Lydon is absolutely massive from what I've seen so far. And yeah, we do have a little bit of summer league thrown in all that, and that hurts. And then Monte Morris, you know, we'll see if he makes the team. And then they lost Gallo, which I have no opposition to. You know, he got a price that they shouldn't have paid, so that's fine. And then the other kind of TBD element with them is Mason Plumlee. It's looking like the market has dried up for him, but we don't know exactly what that's going to be yet. So I'm going A minus. I'm guessing you're going to be more in the B range, and I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, getting Millsap on that 3-1, 3 years, third-year team option, very impressive work for $30 million a year. They didn't even have to give him the max. There weren't really any other bidders, it looked like, and they did a great job of waiting out the market, getting a good feel for it. There was talk that Phoenix could be involved, although that was publicly reported that they wouldn't be. Minnesota, that potential suitor disappeared. The Hawks weren't interested in bringing him back. So at some point, they got to where he was the only option. But the opportunity cost, as you mentioned, is so low there. They had this cap space. What else were they going to be doing with? Really, you could just say, all right, it was either re-sign Gallo or bring Millsap back. And bring Millsap in. And he, of course, is such a wonderful fit with Jokic. And at 32, I think he'll be close to giving them good value on that contract, which, again, that was money that wasn't going to go anywhere else, most likely. That was the good. I also think that they have had the absolute right approach with Mason Plumlee so far. Now we'll see when and if he eventually signs where that ends up. You know, I mean, we've seen teams apparently take a fiscally responsible approach to restricted free agents, such as Mason's brother, and then all of a sudden sign them for a ton of money. You know, I really think that anything more than $20 million in guaranteed money for Plumlee, whose cap hold remains on the books, by the way, they can exceed the cap to re-sign him. Anything more than that, I would probably view it as a bad contract, but we'll see. I mean, I'm sure he still had dreams of getting $15 million a year, if not more than that, over, you know, at least 3 years, and hopefully they will not succumb to that. But all the evidence so far indicates they're doing a good job there. They basically have the room exception still. They still have about, I think, $4 or $5 million in room, even with Plumlee's cap hold. And one of the failures that I thought they had was, I think they really needed another guy who could play defense on the wing with some size and some strength. And there's hope that they're going to get Anunoby maybe at 24, which who wouldn't help this year, but they still need that player long-term in the pipeline, and they did not get him. Mitchell, maybe not that guy, although he's closer to it than anyone that they had. I can't knock it too much because I actually thought that was a good move for them. And then they drafted another power forward. They have a billion power forwards, and they got to do some kind of a trade to consolidate here. But roster spots around the league are precious, and so they may struggle to do that.
There's one more thing I wanted to talk about, which is that it very well might not have been available, but the window that they had for making a consolidation trade is narrowing. And they just have all these players on their roster now, both at power forward, because they've gone through, you know, adding these guys. Arthur, I don't think they're going to trade the guys they just added, maybe Wancho, all that. Will Barton is another great example of this.
Sure.
Either Moutier or Jameer Nelson. And so they have all these players. They're all good. They're all on favorable contracts. Fareed is a little bit more complicated. And the most logical path is to just have fewer guys, ideally, you know, try to trade, you know, four quarters for a dollar. That's never going to happen, but do something. And the longer they wait on that, the harder it is to make those deals happen. And so they might have to, you know, just get less for each of them separately. And that might, you know, it might just be that nothing was ever on the table, but I downgrade. That's part of the minus as well, is that they're just losing opportunities with that the longer they wait.
Yeah. And those guys, when they start the season, some of them not playing, their value is only going to go down. Moutier certainly could be in that category. I could see Malone still playing Jameer Nelson over him, which I think would be a mistake. And also, they're now, with the acquisition of Millsap, are clearly moving into really wanting to make the playoffs this year. Wilson Chandler is a free agent, though. Again, they have nothing to replace him at all at the three, if and when he leaves, and he's been reportedly unhappy there. But now with Gallo gone, he'll at least play more. So I do think that they had a lot of assets here. Also, this deal that they would have made for Kevin Love, I really disliked for them. And then they wouldn't have gotten Millsap either, by the way, if they had made that. They apparently got saved from that by Kevin Pritchard, at least to hear it from those other team sides, agreeing to the trade and then backing out via text message. All that said, I think because they got Millsap, I would have to go with a B+, just because that's a great contract that they got him on. He's really going to help them. But there's a lot of stuff behind that that I think were some missed opportunities, where they have these resources. They needed to get that three man in the pipeline. We've been talking about that forever, and they really struck out on that again, I think, this offseason. And we'll see what they're able to do as far as consolidating the roster. They do have a lot of depth, and you know, a lot depends, of course, on how well Jamal Murray is able to progress as well this season. Let's move on to Golden State here. Why don't you start us off there?
To run through basically what they did, the biggest element of the Warriors offseason was retention. They retain Curry, Durant, Iguodala, Livingston, Zaza Pachulia, David West, and recently JaVale McGee on what appears to be a one-year minimum contract. Then the other changes were they lost Ian Clark, Matt Barnes, and James Michael McAdoo, and they added Nick Young, Omri Caspi, Jordan Bell. I gave them a straight A. It's hard to really kind of keep this together, and whatever the rationale, whether it's a Jedi mind trick or just Durant doing it feel this way, but his cutting salary beyond even the non-Bird to go down so that they, that saved ownership money is probably the most fair way to put it. You know, whether that directly added Nick Young or not, that made them better. You know, I know that you didn't love the Nick Young signing, but getting Nick Young and Omri Caspi for the prices they did looks good, and buying Jordan Bell worked out well too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we don't know how good Bell is going to be, but I already feel better about him than I did McAdoo. I was going to go with an A minus. I changed it to an A as well. I just thought that Young is someone that was very redundant, but if that's, you can get, if your players want him, that's part of keeping this culture together. Getting Steph Curry to not get a player option or a no trade was fantastic. Again, they got KD to take so much less. Iguodala maybe took a little bit more than people thought, but not that much more, and they at least avoided a no trade. I think everyone assumed that Sean Livingston was gone. He's back now. They paid him as well. I mean, the fact that Joe Lacob just was willing to green light this level of spending. Pachulia, they're able to get him to come back on the most they could pay him at non-Bird. You know, they still needed a starting center. I mean, maybe you could have made the argument that it would have been better to upgrade at starting center with that mini mid-level instead of getting Nick Young, but because they had Pachulia's non-Bird rights, they felt they could bring him back and then also get better on the wing. And then maybe the hope is that Bell can play some minutes. They do need a more mobile center option, even though they have a ton of these. And now even getting McGee back, I mean, he's kind of redundant with Damian Jones, that, but they figured, hey, you know, we might as he'll McGee will probably still be better than Jones this year, certainly offensively, so why not bring him back for the minimum? It doesn't cost them anything. And they upgraded every player that they lost, they upgraded basically. I mean, there's no real room for criticism at all. Yeah, here,
well, the only place for criticism is that I think they could use one more point guard, just because Patrick McCaffrey and Clark, but I mean, Clark was miscast as a point guard.
McCaw is better at everything about being a point guard except shooting wide open three pointers than Clark is.
Well, I think that, do you think he can like run? Not that they ever ask the guy in that second
McCaw
unit to do it.
McCaw is a better pick and roll player and a better dribbler than Clark is. Clark like can't even get the ball up court against pressure.
That's fair. I think that maybe, and this actually, it might happen. I don't have any intel on it, but if they could move Kevon Looney and get a minimum guy who's a little bit more capable in case Curry got hurt, that would be an option. We'll have to kind of see with that. But if that's what you're getting at as being a potential weak point, then you know that you're picking nits.
Yeah, and they got rid of the one guy that Kerr loved to play way too much, which was McAdoo as well. So they took took that out of their coach's hand. I mean, it really was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, Caspi is every need that they had, they filled. The only criticism maybe is that Nick Young, McCaw, like, there could be a little bit of disease of me here. McCaw, I think, might actually be better than Young in a lot of situations, and they're not really going to be able to play McCaw. But even that has some benefits, because when McCaw goes into free agency, if he's played less, he'll probably get less in free agency.
Also, I'm going to write about this at some point, but McCaw, now, this is not something the Warriors did well, but so many other teams spending money for next year means that there will be a smaller market for McCaw. So it might even just kind of played into their hands by the virtue of other teams' actions.
Oh, and also the fact that they weren't able to get Bell on a 3-year deal, and instead, because they had to use the full mid-level, it seemed like, on Nick Young, who did apparently have other offers, particularly in New Orleans, as we will get to. But yeah, I mean, the only thing that they had to do that they didn't want to do probably was give that third year to Andre Iguodala. But, you know, that's just money out of Joe Lacob's pocket, and he's been willing to spend it so far. And with the Warriors being the first team to do PSLs in basketball, that will hopefully help them pay those exorbitant luxury tax bills. Shall we continue?
Yeah, the Rockets. So I want to go through the kind of what happened, but then I want you to go grade first, because I feel like we'll talk about that. And then I think we're going to have a disagreement here. It's just an instinct. So they added Chris Paul through the massive trade. So that was Chris Paul for a future first round pick, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Wiltshire, and then an army of non-guaranteed guys. That was the biggest part of their offseason, as it would have been for just about any other team on the planet. Then they added PJ Tucker, Luke Richard and Bob Mute, Tarik Black, Gauthier, Isaiah Hartenstein, who I don't think is going to play for them this year, but they drafted him. And then they retained Nene, Troy Williams, and Bobby Brown.
Yeah, I went with an A-, and they got Chris Paul. I really enjoyed that. That obviously, and he's a max level player. You got him. Didn't even have to pay him a max salary. Now, they did have to give up a lot to get him, giving up Beverly, Lou Williams, Decker, Montrell Harrell, and a first round pick as well, top three protected. Might have liked it since the Clippers had no leverage at all if they could have at least not given up that first round pick. Obviously, everything else was needed to make the salaries match. They did do a great job of acquiring these non-guaranteed salaries to help out with trades, although it looks like some of them will not be used. I think that around the margins as well, there are a lot of teams that we saw that either have big stars or acquired big stars and then maybe didn't do as good of a job after getting the big stars. I thought Houston did absolutely as well as they could have in getting Tucker and Bob Mute. Those are guys who can at least defend the Golden State Warriors. Tarik Black, a mobile center as well, a guy who can keep the miles off Nene, who they managed to bring back on 3 years, $11 million with the non-Bird exception after it looked like over 38 was going to torpedo that agreement. Troy Williams did well in summer league. Brown is Chris Paul's buddy and helped recruit him, so that's why they're keeping him around. Hartenstein didn't show much in summer league, but for a guy in the middle of the second round, he has NBA athleticism and some modicum of skill he can develop over in Europe. So yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be an A minus. The only thing that I am bothered by is that I thought maybe having to give up that first round pick to the Clippers, they could have avoided. But you can look at it that way, or you can look at it as, well, they would have had to give up all these assets to get rid of Ryan Anderson and sign Chris Paul outright. And they also get him for pretty cheap now. They can kind of try things out. Whether I would rather have just gotten Paul in trade or just signed him to a new contract for $35 million a year right now for 4 years, I don't know. What do you think? Which of those would you rather have had? Do you like it that they did it this way, or would you think giving up the assets to clear salary, but maybe you still hold on to guys like Beverly? Lou Williams probably would have had to go, but they probably could have held on to Beverly at least.
I like the trial run because it really might not work. I think there are some perils with this, you know, with I'm hopeful because it's just such a big difference for these guys. And, you know, I think it's today or tomorrow that they're playing together in the Drew League. So that'll be fun to see. I'm not sure if anybody, I'm sure somebody will live stream it, but it's just a big risk. And so to have that kind of mutual out clause works reasonably well. And also there's just so few teams that have cap space. There's a possibility that you could get something in a sign and trade for him, which is functionally kind of what they did. So I would rather have it the way that they did it, just because now if it doesn't work, you have a way of rebounding and doing it. If you signed him to this contract, Paul's an older guy, you know, maybe if he gets hurt or something, then you're just sitting there saying, oh crap, this is what we are. We can't really move. It's hard to move him, something like that. And the Rockets have a bright future now either way.
Yeah, I think the greater risk is just that it doesn't work perfectly and Paul just goes somewhere else. You know, I think that's the greater risk. So that's why you would have wanted to have him for longer, I think. But and now you're also risking potentially having to give him 5 years. They'll have full Bird rights. He's going to be asking for a 5-year max contract if it does work. And that, of course, could get very precarious. We also, I don't think, mentioned that James Harden agreed to a designated player veteran extension, So which has a player option on it. So, but that should be, I mean, he may be overpaid by the end of that. But again, you're locking him up now.
One small point on that, too. I think that they benefited from the timing of that, because if you kind of treat that as a constraint that they were going to have to give him that contract, Agreeing to it this year as opposed to next year, avoiding the final year of what that contract, because he would have been eligible, is huge for them. Because if you think it's going to be bad at the end, getting one year of negative value removed at zero cost to you is great.
Well, especially because, as you were noting the other day when we were talking, he automatically would have been eligible for that anyway, right? Because he had made it. No, actually, I don't think that's true, would it? Do you automatically already be eligible for it next year?
Hasn't he made All-NBA the last 2 years?
I don't think he made it.
He might not have made it two years ago or last year.
Yeah, when they went 41-41.
No, you're right. Klay Thompson got that spot. He did not get it.
Yeah, so there was some risk for him, much like with John Wall, although Harden, a good enough player that I think we all agree, especially if they have a good year, he's probably going to make it. But nonetheless, he could get injured or something and not be eligible. So good for him to lock in there. There's something that both of them got. So I ultimately went with A-, the minus only because I felt like maybe they give a little bit too much for Paul, but that is absolutely nitpicking, and I think they're in excellent position, and we'll see whether, you know, they make this Carmelo thing happen or not. You can count me as skeptical that they're going to be able to find something there. I think what ultimately ends up happening is Melo gets bought out, but just because a trade can't be agreed to, because they're just not going to be able to move Ryan Anderson, and it's not worth it to trade. If you're basically saying, hey, we got to give up two first round picks for Anderson to get Anderson off our books, and now to get Melo, do you really want to trade two first round picks for Melo? I don't think so. But anyway, yeah, I think A- for them, and if I had to go, it would be closer to an A if I had to pick a direction there.
I gave them a straight A. I was not expecting to, and the reason why is because I think I do agree that they gave up too much, they gave up more than I expected in the Chris Paul trade. But why this is an A offseason for me is because they added players on top of that that make more sense for what they're trying to do. So they got more versatile defensive forwards. That is something they need if they're going to try to compete to win the Western Conference, and then theoretically if they do that, to win the championship. They need players like that, and Patrick Beverley was a wonderful player on a good contract, but he was marginalized by having Chris Paul, especially if they're going to do a stagger with Paul and Harden, because if you do that, then that opens up minutes with either one of them for Eric Gordon, who is a better fit with that than Beverley was. And then the forwards are good. I think Sam Decker was a nice player for them, but PJ Tucker is going to do more of what they need. PJ Tucker has a versatility defensively that is exceedingly important, and the fact that he can kind of slide on some of the bigger guys gives them something that they didn't have. Bob Mute, Tarik Black, you know, I don't think all those guys are going to move the needle a lot, but it's more bites at the apple, and the ability to give up a little bit less in that trade by acquiring this army of non-guaranteed contracts was a nice piece of business by Daryl Morey. The other point that I feel like we need to make just in talking about this was the short-lived embarrassment about the over 38 flub up with Nene, that they couldn't give him the four-year contract that they wanted to, and then they ended up, since they couldn't give him four, they ended up giving him a 2+1, and that's a pretty significant difference considering it was a bargain of a contract, because it's at, you know, the same value as Pachulia, so about a little over $3 million a year. So if they could get, the more years you can get a player that good on, the better. So that's a small thing, but, you know, it's still worth mentioning.
Also, that PJ Tucker contract will be a bad contract by the end, I think, although I said that about his last contract, and it's with the cap going up and him continuing to play well, I was wrong. But Tucker is on a four-year deal, about $32 million, but the last year is, I think, almost totally non-guaranteed, if not wholly non-guaranteed. And even so, but I think for this year, getting guys who can at least plausibly defend the Warriors, at least now, they're not as good as the Warriors still, but at least there's theoretically a path. And if one of Curry or Durant goes down, or maybe even Klay Thompson now, like you can talk about maybe them being in the neighborhood. Where are you going to put Tucker out there? You've got Paul, a great defensive player. Clint Capella has excellent mobility. If you want to put in Bamute out there, yeah, you might be hurting for shooting, but you've got great individual players in Paul and Harden who can still create enough offense for you in theory. And then you've got these defensive players. So yeah, nobody's going to have as many awesome two-way players on the wing as the Warriors do, but at least they've got guys who can be one-way players on either side and be really good at it.
Ready to move on to the Clippers?
No, I'm ready to move on to this from MeUndies. My girlfriend actually was just telling me the other day that MeUndies are far better fitting on me than any other underwear that I own. And they've been kind enough to send me some. I've purchased some more on my own dime. And basically the way it works now is I've got like 10 pairs of them, and I wear those 10 before I get into any other of my underwear when it comes out of the laundry. They are the softest, most comfortable underwear that I have ever owned. This month's patterns were designed by the legendary 80s clothing brand Cross Colors, with names that live up to their bold design and bright colors. You've got to see them for yourself. And the way to do that is to go to MeUndies.com/capspace. That'll get you 20% off your first pair, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/capspace. There's a reason they've sold over 5 million pairs to date. They're based in LA. They're sustainably sourced, and they're made from micromodality fabric, 3 times softer than cotton. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, if you and I somehow crazily don't have the same taste in underwear, they are free. So once again, get 20% off your first pair plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/capspace right now. So these teams that have lost a big free agent, we'll deal with this with Utah as well. It's always difficult to grade them because you can look at it as like, all right, they lost this franchise player. They're going to be a lot worse this year. How can you give them a positive grade? But then you can also say, hey, look, like this guy wanted to leave. The decisions that led to him wanting to leave happened a long time ago. That's outside the scope of this. So given that reality, how did they recover? And what is your answer to that, Danny?
My answer to that is I completely agree with it. And I have different responses to that with both these teams. And the reason why it's different is because with the Clippers, they made big moves outside of that that I disagreed with. So their haul in the Chris Paul trade is phenomenal. Like that is a wonderful move for them. And that alone, like I would have given, I didn't do a grade for that trade, but I would have given it an A in some form. However, the Blake Griffin contract is going to be bad for them long term. I don't think he's going to age particularly well. It commits them to a path that I don't think in a major market was the best one for them, especially looking at what's coming in free agency next year. I also don't like the Gallinari contract for them along the same lines. 3 years at over $20 million for him. Guy with major injury risk, a player who I like when he's healthy, but he's just not healthy. I mean, pencil him in for 60 to 65 games, and that might even be optimistic. So you have a lot of that. And then also they lost more because not only did they just lose Chris Paul, they lost JJ Redick without compensation. They had to dump Jamal Crawford with assets. And then a lot of the depth pieces that Doc had done a nice job acquiring in recent years, Felton, Bamute, Mo Spates, those kind of things, those guys are all gone. Now he has Rock Divers did a wonderful job also with how they kind of reacted to that part of the Chris Paul trade. Tay Dosic is a nice contract. Willie Reed was a great signing at his price, and buying draft picks that became Juwan Evans and Sendarius Thornwell. I thought all that worked out well.
Yeah, that was solid. Evans, I think, could grow into a backup point guard in time. Thornwell has some size on the wing. We, of course, talked about them on our podcast about the Summer League. My plan, once Paul left, and even more so because they were able to get some other guys who can play, I think to some extent they were tempted because they got those guys and be like, oh, we still have some good players. We could try and compete. And also, who knows how much their attempt to get a new arena in Englewood is influenced by all this. There's this idea that Blake Griffin is Clipper royalty. He's really the first true Clipper star that they've ever had. They're trying to build some sort of a culture. They probably want to retire his jersey, have some player like that who's been around for long enough. They did at least avoid giving him a no trade, but that is going to be a pretty rough contract. I think there's a chance it could all work out, but I think it's more likely than not that it looks pretty ugly. Even in the beginning, due to his health concerns, it's still unclear whether he'll even be ready to start the season or not. And then Gallo, yeah, he was probably the best three on the market. They certainly paid him like the best three on the market. But you have to remember that they had to give up a first round pick to move Crawford to get him, to send out enough salary to get him. And also because they would have been hard capped and there's no way they could have fit Crawford in that way. So they had to give up Diamond Stone, who, you know, I'm not sure he's ever going to become something, but someone who they at least invested some resources in last year has some scoring potential. That first round pick that they got from Houston went right out the door to Atlanta. And this team is definitely going to be an interesting one, shall we say. Tea Dosic, of course, was a great contract. I think $6 million a year, only $2 million guaranteed for next year, though he also does have that player option. They did the J.R. Smith contract with him. That was creative. Good job there. This team is a 7 seed, an 8 seed, maybe, if everything breaks right. And that's this year. And I think it's only going to continue to go downhill from there with DeAndre Jordan. He also can be a free agent. And I think the path not traveled, which to me would have been negotiate a little harder with Blake. You know, maybe like they made him the full max offer and he signed it and he didn't take any of his other meetings. All right, fine. Maybe he takes those meetings. Maybe he gets the full max offer from Miami, or maybe he gets it from Phoenix and he leaves. Or maybe you get him on a price that's makes him a little bit more of an asset and is not going to kill you, or you let him go and that's not the end of the world. And they had trade assets. They could have moved Beverly. They could have moved Lou Williams. They could have not signed Gallo. They could have moved DeAndre Jordan, although potentially that market may have been a little bit more tepid. But to me, this was a year where they could have, you're not winning the West, you're not coming anywhere close this season. So just get a bunch of assets, try to rebuild, be bad this year, get a top pick in the next draft, and then you just have a ton of space in 2018, 2019. You're in LA, granted that hasn't been fantastic for the Lakers, but just chill. But I think, you know, with Doc Rivers, his mentality, Steve Ballmer's mentality where they are, they just couldn't do that. But that would have been what I would have done. So I think as I didn't like that aspect of it, but I loved what they got for Paul. I think that if they were trying to be good this year, if you just say, hey, we have to retain Blake, that they did an okay job of that, and they'll at least be interesting this year. So I just went for a straight C with the Clippers after all that.
They were the hardest team to grade for me because it was a lot of big things that matter that it considered in it. I originally gave it a C minus, but then I started thinking about elements of this that are a little bit smaller, like Sam Decker, who on a rookie scale deal is a very nice piece for them.
I didn't even mention him. He actually is a guy who could be like a real three man.
Absolutely. Montrezl Harrell could be a part of the rotation. They got Willie Reed for a song at the minimum, which I think is a really nice contract. So I ended up going with a straight C as well, and really anything in the range from C minus to C plus. I think all of those have cogent arguments, and then I'm sure some will go higher because they got guys with name value. But I think they could, you know, if they had gone, as you said, as you clarified it, the road less traveled, like that would have been better for them. But yeah, I at the same point, like we kind of knew they were never going to actually do that, especially considering the unusual constraints that are on them. But I think that gives me a greater appreciation for what the team that shares their building did.
Yeah, we sure didn't think that we would ever be giving the LA Lakers a really good grade. I give them an A minus. I loved everything that they did. Lonzo Ball, after a rough debut, looked like exactly what he was supposed to be in summer league. Getting KCP on a 1-year deal, which I think certainly if the Lakers don't get exactly who they want next summer, that could turn into a longer term relationship. His fit next to Ball is outstanding. They, sensing that the market would grow tighter for these sorts of things, I think they did well to move on from Mozgov, 3 years, $48 million remaining on his contract and dead salary. They also perhaps sense that D'Angelo Russell, maybe he was going to get better, maybe he was going to get worse, but who knows whether that deal to trade him away and use him as the sweetener to get off of Mozgov would have been available. They certainly seem to have some intelligence. I mean, it's in the public domain for that matter that LeBron James, Paul George could be interested in them. There are other stars who will be available next summer as well. They are looking like, I think, the only team that could in theory get to double max space. And I think if they now have it within their ability, if they don't bring Randall back and they stretch Deng, they're pretty darn close to that, or they could invest a pick to move Dane. The fact that they didn't have to give up any future first rounders to get off of Mozgov now we thought that maybe, all right, this is too early to move Mozgov. If you just chill out for this year, then he becomes easier to move with 2 years left. Maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe that room goes away, right? We've been talking about that. The Nets, maybe they take on some other salary dump then they actually maybe think that he's can play. Maybe Russell isn't worth it, right? Like his value could have gone down. The fit of Russell and Ball together defensively in the backcourt is pretty ugly. They wanted to just put the ball in Lonzo's hands right away. And then also in that trade to get Brook Lopez back, a guy who actually, another guy, you know, they could potentially re-sign him as well if it doesn't work out for their big aspirations next year. And then they got the pick that became Kyle Kuzma, and Kuzma looked excellent in summer league also.
That trade with the Nets is still kind of hard for me to process just because there were the ancillary pieces going back and forth were kind of strange. Like Brook Lopez, wonderful player, provides a fair amount of present value. Just I didn't think the Lakers really needed that present value because they're not focusing on this year. But then when they got KCP, you start to see this come into a little clearer focus. I mean, they didn't do the Brook Lopez trade anticipating that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was going to get renounced, but that ended up happening. And so they are going to be competitive this year, more so than they would have been otherwise. I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but they'll be worth watching. They'll be engaging. It'll also be a better surrounding set of talent to evaluate their young guys. You know, you're not going to have them and then just like a bunch of players who aren't going to be on your team long term. It's like, okay, we'll get a better sense of what Lonzo is with improved teammates. We'll get a better sense of what Brandon Ingram is with improved teammates. And so I think that is important because they're going to have to make still some tough decisions in order to get to the place they want to be with two max slots. And so who among their core is actually good enough to do that. Julius Randle is another piece they're going to have to figure out. So I ended up with an A-2, despite not liking the Nets trade from their perspective as much. But another point that we should talk about here is that while he's not the biggest signing or the biggest thing they did, Tyler Ennis on a super team-friendly contract really does help them too. Another guy, point guard, maintains the flexibility with their space because they can. He has a team option for next year. So if they want to keep him around,
that actually is non-guaranteed.
Oh, it's non-guaranteed, not a team option. You're right. Good call. But so that they can use that well, I think that's useful for them. And they did something similar to that with Thomas Bryant, who was one of their other second-round picks. And Josh Hart, I liked at Villanova. I watched him a little bit. I liked him then as kind of a support player. And that makes more sense for where they think they want to go, that you need those guys that aren't going to be superstars but can fit in with other players as low-usage, try-hard type players. And they lost D'Angelo Russell, and they lost Nick Young. But other than that, you know, I mean, Tarik Black was a worthwhile rotation player, but it's not like that he really affected their future. And so to brighten this the way that they did without really sacrificing that much other than Russell is impressive, and the physical discipline makes them stand out.
I also like the deal that they made. They had 27 and 28 going into the draft. They had 28 from the Lou Williams trade from the Rockets, and then they moved back to 30, picking up Josh Hart, a player I like better than the player the Jazz selected there at 28, Tony Bradley. And then they also picked up the 42nd pick, which became Bryant, who I don't like a ton, but he's a 7-footer with some mobility and shooting ability, plays hard. So just getting that basically for free and still getting the guy that they wanted, I think, at 30 was good. And maybe the room exception, they haven't used it all yet, but they've got plenty now at backup point guard with Ennis coming back. And I'm just excited to see how all these young guys turn out. They've got some options now in the backcourt at the four with a stretch option, guys who can turn into something. And I think Brook Lopez is really going to help their offense a lot. KCP is really going to help their defense a lot to have a big who can shoot and then someone who can actually defend someone in the backcourt, which they have been utterly lacking of late. So yeah, A- for me. What did you have?
I also had an A-.
All right.
Memphis. This was my second hardest team to grade because it's also hard to figure out. Like, I think, like, you can say my grade is incomplete / because they still have, we still don't have a resolution on Jermichael Green and Tony Allen. Like, that really will swing it a lot. But then their other moves, Tyreke Evans on a really nice 1-year contract, Ben McLemore on a less nice 2-year it was about at the taxpayer mid level, but then it ended up being more complicated because they ended up using the full mid level. Then they drafted Ivan Rabb and Dylan Brooks, brought over Rade Zagoric, who they drafted last year, signed Mario Chalmers to a partially guaranteed deal, and then they lost Zach Randolph and Vince Carter, and then the other signing was that they retained Wayne Selden. They technically declined his team option and then re-signed him for a 2-year deal.
I would not have wanted to pay Carter or Randolph the amount that they received in Sacramento. Losing Randolph will hurt them a little bit, although I thought his season last year was overrated. It was pretty inefficient, although he was the only guy who could do anything a lot of the times when he was in there playing with the second unit, so that's forgivable. But as a 35-year-old guy, paying him $12 million a year wasn't feasible for them. They need to avoid the tax, and they have basically about $13 million below the tax right now with Green still out there and Tony Allen. This is just a guess, but I would imagine that Allen will probably return there, and it's just they can't decide what his contract's going to be yet because they need to see what Green is going to sign for, and then they'll give Allen whatever remains below the tax after Green signs like that, or maybe they'll try and move someone as well like that, I think. But until they know what Green is at, they can't really give Allen their offer. And it seems the fact that we haven't even heard Allen discussed in a lot of other areas, I think that's just my guess of what's going to end up happening. And for Green, we don't know where he's going to end up, how many. He really doesn't want to take the qualifying offer. He's 27. Hopefully they can come to some kind of an arrangement that'll be fair. I mean, I'm going to assume that they'll get him for something about $10 million a year, you know, maybe 3 years, something like that. And that would be just fine for what he is. Selden, you mentioned him. He looks like he can play based on summer league. He started in the playoffs last year. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a solid rotation guy or not, but he has some promise. And McLemore, I think I liked more than you. This is actually something that Grizzlies executive John Hollinger wrote about back when he was in the public sphere, the idea of a second draft where guys are drafted so young, they flame out in their first location as McLemore did in Sacramento, and you sign him on the cheap and see whether you can rehabilitate him a little bit. And McLemore has some talent. He's made some strides, not the most cerebral player by reputation, but someone that I think could help Memphis in spots. He does have some physical talent. He does have some shooting ability. And in theory, if they have Conley and they have Chandler Parsons playing well, they don't really need someone who can do something off the dribble, which is McLemore's big weakness right now. The Rab pick, I didn't care for. I don't really know what he is. Zagoric, they got him on kind of the 3-year close to the minimum. He's making like $850K this year. Chalmers, you know, $25,000 guaranteed. Bring him back in, see if he looks a little bit better this year. Dylan Brooks had some flashes in summer league. I think Evans is a low cost flyer, is someone who should have gotten more some other places. He's another guy who can provide some creation. You'd hope that, I mean, he and Parsons both have these bad knees, but that maybe one of them could be healthy at a time to just give you some sort of oomph off the dribble off the second unit.
I gave them a C minus for now, and Evans is a big part of the reason why it's not lower, just because I don't think taking a gamble on Ben McLemore you can do, but what they sacrifice in terms of multi-year commitment at over $5 million, like, I just don't think he's shown that yet. If they'd given him something more in the James Ennis, Troy Daniels range and then had more flexibility for somebody else, I would have liked it. But giving them a C minus for now, you know, if they get JaMychal Green on a good deal, then this shoots up a lot because they haven't done as much. So that means that each remaining move matters more. You know, it's not like the Clippers who just had an army of things that you're evaluating. And so each piece, you know, each less significant piece matters a little bit less. There is a lot of vacillation in this. If they lose Tony Allen, then it's going to drop, that sort of a thing. So I'm at a C minus for now.
I went with a B minus, but I noting that it's incomplete. And I'm just doing that with the assumption that they'll get Green in the fold at something around $10 million per season. Minnesota was a team that, again, got the big things right, not so much with the small things. I mean, that Butler trade was such an absolute heist. It's hard to downgrade them too much. For those who don't remember, they traded Zach LaVine, the number 7 pick, which became Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn for the number 16 pick. Getting that 16 pick was absolutely a fleecing. And Jimmy Butler. So I loved that aspect of it. That's just so good. They're going to be a playoff team this year, almost certainly. They weren't last year. They're going to be much better this year. You have to give them the credit. I also thought that the Jeff Teague signing was, if not an amazing contract, still getting him on a 2+1, not breaking the bank. They didn't really have any other options available at point guard once they made the Butler deal. Holiday was staying home in New Orleans. George Hill got pretty similar money in Sacramento, although he didn't get the player option. But Teague is younger than Hill now, and shot it okay on spot ups the last couple of years. I thought that that was a fine move. I think I like that one more than you. Is that right, Danny?
Yes, that is absolutely true. And Teague is not a bad shooter, but he is a semi-reluctant one. And so that part of it bothers me a little bit. And the other, just the overwhelming part of Minnesota's offseason was that outside of the Jimmy Butler trade, Tom Thibodeau built a team for a league that doesn't exist. You know,
Other move, I think, to me, other than the Jimmy Butler trade and Teague, I just hated.
I agree with you on that. Taj Gibson, not a player we both really like, but just not a great fit for what they were doing.
He's a backup center now. Taj Gibson is basically a backup center now.
And so is Gorgui Dieng. So they can hang out together and talk about that. and then they also, you know, they had that pick. They used it on Justin Patton. Justin Patton, another guy who is duplicated by all the other things they did. And there were good players still on the board. Players that I'm not super familiar with Patton, but there were guys that were a better fit for kind of where they were going. They also traded Ricky Rubio to the Jazz.
That was
Jazz.
A good trade. I agree with that. I thought that was a good trade to get a pick for him and to get someone in Teague who at least fit a little bit better than Rubio, though then they immediately abandoned all ideas of fit with every other move that they made.
And the other one we didn't mention is Jamal Crawford. Crawford at the room exception for 2 years is not great, but the fit makes it so much worse because they didn't need another guy. They didn't need a guy like him.
Can't play him like they don't have anyone else on the wing. So like, are they going to, I guess he's not going to close games, but it's like, he's a bad fit with Wiggins. Butler, he's a little better fit with, but he's going to take the ball out of the hands of more efficient options. And just, they don't have anybody else who on the wing, you know, they have two guys who can play the three on the roster. And they're both going to be in the starting lineup, Butler and Wiggins.
And those guys will play a lot. So they have, and they didn't really take any bites at the apple at less conventional things, like getting a long-term stretch four they have Bielitsa, but just somebody else as a shot at it to see if that works. And now they're relying a lot on Tyus Jones as the backup one. I like Tyus Jones, but they're also something else that could change this for them is that Minnesota still has a bunch of unused roster spots. If they can get talented players for the minimum, it'll help me a little bit. But I still gave them an A- because the Jimmy Butler trade is such a special move. They got a bona fide all-star, all-NBA player under contract for 2 years at a team-friendly value who they will use reasonably well, though the surrounding pieces don't fit, for very, very little. So I think, to me, I couldn't realistically give them anything less than an A-, so I gave them an A-.
Yeah, I went B+ just because I think it's almost more disappointing to me. I think this team could have been like a 55-win team if they had just filled in around those guys well enough. And I think Tibbs is just freaked out by the fact that he thinks Karl Towns isn't a good enough defensive player and he needs another big with him, and that is really messing up a lot of this, whereas it's just, you know, Jang, they overpaid. I think because this is the last year they could possibly have cap space, I would have loved to have seen them get even more aggressive about dumping salary and try to get in on, you know, maybe a Paul Millsap as well. I think they could have even gotten maybe him and Teague. Now, part of the reason they can't do that is because they're worried about extensions for Wiggins and Towns and getting into the tax pretty deeply in a couple of years. So that's part of the issue here as well.
They also probably didn't expect Millsap to take the structure he did. Like if they had known at the beginning of the offseason that he would take 2 years with a third year team option, then maybe they would have been able to pull that off, because that's the timeline that gets concerning for them.
Yeah, but I think maybe Millsap would have preferred to go there, though he does have that connection to Denver. But yeah, I mean, signing Gibson, I mean, when you consider that Patrick Patterson, I mean, that was just a huge missed opportunity to me. When you saw what Patrick Patterson got, Patrick Patterson signed a 3 year deal for basically what Taj Gibson is going to get for one of the 2 years. You know, I mean, if they had offered anywhere close to that to Patrick Patterson, I think he probably would have gone there, and Patterson a much, much better fit for what I think they should be trying to do. And it's just, and this team is going to have a ton of guys that I think are good players, and every offensive possession is going to be an ISO, just complete eyesore for them. And they might still score a tag because just Butler, Towns, lesser extent Teague and Wiggins are just that good. But if they could have just gotten a stretch guy who could switch a little bit, defend more on the perimeter, I think they really would have been ready to go with that core four. And instead, just everyone around that core four is just not good to me, at least in terms of fit. So, I mean, it's amazing that we're spending so much more time criticizing them just because, you know, that Butler move is so obvious. But I really want to explain how it is that, like, you're not getting an A from me, even when you pull off close to the best trade of the summer. I think the absolute best trade is coming up still.
Yeah, and it's also the nature that we also have talked a lot about the Jimmy Butler trade. I mean, it was the focus of an entire podcast at one point, and it'll be also a subject throughout the year. And one of the things I like doing in these offseason grades is getting into some of the other stuff that we didn't pay as much attention to. And that's basically the entire New Orleans Pelicans offseason, because the Pelicans they've made so few moves, partially because they're constrained by the potential of the luxury tax or maybe even the hard cap, depending on how this shakes out, that the biggest thing they did was they retained Drew Holiday, 5 years, $126 million. We still don't have the exact, I haven't seen the exact contract structure for that. And then they added Rajon Rondo, Frank Jackson, who they picked up in the early second round, and then they brought back Darius Miller, and then they lost Tim Frazier, who they traded to the Wizards. Then they cut loose Quinn Cook and Axel Tupan, who finished the season with them.
I gave them a D, and the only reason it was that high was because they managed to keep Holiday and not just get completely destroyed on his contract. 5 years, $25 million a year. I mean, that is clearly an overpay for him. At least he's relatively young for a free agent, though, only 27. And he appeared to finally be over some of those injury concerns last year, but those always have loomed in the rearview mirror, as they do for any player who plays for the Pelicans. Holiday, AD, Cousins, those are three pretty good players. They don't have anyone else, though, and they tried to get in on Nick Young, but they don't have anybody right now who is an NBA 3 on the roster. Quincy Pondexter might come back and play. He hasn't played in 2 years. I'm not counting on him. Solomon Hill is probably going to start at the 3. He's a 4. Dante Cunningham, who opted out, maybe they'll end up bringing him back. They've been able to maintain his bird rights, although they do have issues with staying below the tax, maybe, but he's also a 4 as well. I mean, it really seems like they lucked into this good trade with Cousins. And then again, you know, they let Omri Caspi go. He would easily, to me, be their starting three right now if they just kept his bird rights. I mean, he signed for the minimum in Golden State. They could have probably got him for like $4 million a year, no problem. And then this Rondo signing, then they're going to start Rondo and Holiday together. I mean, now you're basically, the fit issues get even worse. They don't have anyone who can shoot at the three. They got two bigs. Holiday is like an okay spot up shooter, but he's more comfortable shooting off the dribble. And Rondo can't shoot at all. So now you've completely eliminated the $25 million a year point guard that you got. He's going to be wasted because either he's got the ball in his hands and they're not going to guard Rondo, so he can't do anything, or he's not going to have the ball in his hands.
To me, they had two big needs coming into the offseason. One was shooting, particularly perimeter shooting, and then the other one was ball handlers beyond Drew Holiday. They just needed Jordan Crawford. Can be a part of the solution, but he isn't the solution. And they, by and large, accomplished the second, because Rajon Rondo, you know, he can do that as a backup point guard, certainly a capable steward when he's motivated and playing well. And, you know, Frank Jackson, long-term, maybe he's the guy who can replace Rondo after a year or two. That could certainly be possible. They not only didn't really solve the first issue of shooting, they actively made it worse with bringing in Rondo and potentially playing those guys together. And that was really the way to make an AD DeMarcus Cousins front court work, is you have low usage guys that provide gravity just because the guys can't help. And so you could do it that way. And then you let AD and Boogie go to work, and Drew Holiday can facilitate a lot of that through pick and rolls, through, you know, he can come off screens at least a little bit. So you work in that way. And when you missed on one of those two, it just makes their team not work.
They did sign Darius Miller, who Aaron Jackson on the pod last week was very complimentary of, playing in Germany last year. He played for the Pels a couple of years ago. I'm not going to say this guy is ready to step in and start as an NBA small forward, which they still need, but maybe that could be a nice signing. I like the concept of maybe trying to find undervalued guys in Europe. The move for Frank Jackson, I like that one. They moved up from 41 to 31. And used cash to do so, getting Jackson. The Tim Frazier trade made no sense to me whatsoever. He was making $2 million a year, was a totally fine option to me at backup point guard. I don't know that Rondo is even necessarily better than him, frankly. And instead, they decided to trade him for the 52nd pick, which they eventually sold for cash, presumably in part to pay for moving up from 41 to 31. But I mean, when you have a $2 million a year backup point guard, just roll with him. He's adequate there and puts your resources into the wing. They did try to go after Nick Young. They didn't get him, but they weren't really even reported suitors for any of the threes on the market. I mean, they could have just even tried to get any number of guys who didn't sign for much. I mean, and even if it's like, because their other problem is that, like, I don't even think their defense on the wing is that good. Like, Solomon Hill is like an okay defensive player, but again, he's more of a combo forward defender. So even if they got like a Cephalosha type of guy, they could have offered him a bigger role and maybe a little more money than he got in Utah. Even though he's not a good shooter, at least he can do one part of the thing you need to do the three. They don't have anybody who can do either of the things you need to do on either end of the court at the three right now. And I'm gonna have to think about that more. I'm not gonna predict their record yet, but when so many others in the West move forward, this is a critical year for the franchise. To just blow it this badly during the offseason is very disappointing to me. And of course, you know, it's not like the fact that ownership will not be paying the luxury tax under any circumstances, apparently. Hey, maybe this team should be in a market that could actually afford to pay the luxury tax. But this is like the most critical season. You got to convince Cousins to stay and you're still not going to pay it. It's like, you know, that's no good either. They maybe could have gotten somebody who would have helped them if they were willing to go a couple million into the tax, or maybe risk that and then make some tax avoiding moves later.
Yeah, it's also when Rajon Rondo signed for, I think it was $100,000 more than the biannual. And so you're kind of sitting there going, huh, I wonder what that's about. And then, you know, the idea that, oh, that doesn't really matter if you're not going to pay the luxury tax, because those constraints are less stringent than the one that appears that they put on themselves. And the three market wasn't deep, but there were guys that took very little. I mean, even I can't believe I'm even throwing his name out there, but like Jeff Green took the minimum. Like Jeff Green would be the best healthy three on their roster, if we're counting Solomon Hill as a four, which I largely do. And so those sorts of things, and there aren't really anybody available that, you know, there are guys that could be rotation players, maybe like Brandon Rush or Mike Dunleavy, but those guys aren't starters. And so it's going to be hard for them to fix this. And it's not like they're asset rich. And when you think about that, they might want to keep some of their other assets to try to unload some of the still remaining bad money on their books, Omar Asik being the big one, maybe Alexei Ajinsa, depending on how they work this out. So I ended up, people are going to think that we did these grades in concert in some form, but we didn't. We did it separately. I gave them a D as well because they just didn't solve their problems. And while this might not be completely fair to throw at them, the rest of the West got so much better that I don't expect them to make the playoffs this year. And so then you start to say, well, even if some of the stuff that they did works out, if they lose Cousins, then they still have a lot of the same financial commitments they have, and then they're even more screwed.
Well, in contrast to them, OKC was amazing. I give him an A+.
I don't give A pluses, but they had the best offseason in the entire league.
Yeah, this is a team that, for all of Westbrook's heroics, got lucky to go 47-35 last year. On the surface, had few, if any, ways to improve, and then they traded for Paul George, capitalizing on what I would say is some misevaluations by Kevin Pritchard, Indiana's GM. But they did it. They got Paul George for Domantas Sabonis and an extended Victor Oladipo, who is actually making more money than Paul George. They saved money in that Paul George trade. Just an unbelievable transaction. Yeah, I know he's only under contract for 1 year, but I mean, even just to get him for 1 year, that price is well worth it. And you know, maybe you have a 30% chance of re-signing him, or 50%. And I think this team is going to be a defensive monster. I think they now match up pretty well with Golden State, other than the fact that Russell Westbrook rarely plays well against them. But getting Patrick Patterson, we talked about that contract already in the Minnesota section, how they should have gone after him and failed. They really did a great job of capitalizing on mistakes around the league, not paying Patterson more, I think, is another one of those, just by the league in general.
There's a second underrated part of that, of this, that was brilliant by Sam Presti, which is the fallback in case this goes badly. It got a lot better with the way that they did this. So yes, Paul George could leave after this year. I would probably rather have empty cap space than Victor Oladipo on his current contract. I'm not, like, he could prove me wrong. He could have a wonderful year with the Pacers, but that's where I'm leaning right now. And so what Oklahoma City can do is, yeah, maybe, like, because Russell Westbrook, as of this moment, has still not signed his extension yet, the designated veteran. So if he, you know, yeah, maybe those guys leave. But if those guys leave, you basically want to clear the decks. And if they had Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo, and presumably they would still have retained Andre Robertson, depending on how that would have worked out, they wouldn't have been able to do that. They just would have kind of been trapped in this sub-playoff pit, and they would have had a lot of money committed. They wouldn't have really been able to get out of it.
You mean the exact pit that Indiana is now in?
Correct. And so now if George leaves, if George and Westbrook leave, they have a pretty cogent situation. You know, they have Patterson on a reasonable contract. Robertson's on a fine contract. It's not my, you know, $10 million a year for him. And they only gave him 3 years, which I think was nice. They didn't have to go long term in case it doesn't work out. And then they also, on the margins, did a really nice move with Raymond Felton. Felton shores up what was their biggest weakness last year at backup point guard. I mean, they had the worst backup point guards I think I can remember on any team. And they were able to add him, steady veteran, you know, not the greatest backup point guard in the world, but one of the best guys they could get for the minimum.
Yeah. All they had was the minimum because they used the full taxpayer bid level on Patterson.
Correct. And so wonderful contract at that. And again, the price, because part of that is subsidized by the league, that doesn't look as bad. I'm also impressed that it looks like they're at least going to start the season over the tax. They might even stay into it, which when you have Russell Westbrook and possibly Paul George potentially hitting free agency, you want to show them that you're committed to doing that. And it is really at this point a 1 year commitment, because if Paul George opts out and leaves, then it's more of an abstraction. But so I was really, really impressed with what Presti did. And one of my biggest focuses in this is a team that does a lot with a little. And that's what Oklahoma City did this year.
And I also like Terrence Ferguson, who now, in fact, has signed.
He did.
He got his FIBA letter of clearance. Fred Katz reported that happened earlier in the month. And so he's on board now. He was unable to play in Summer League. Still don't know what the delay was there initially, why he couldn't play in Summer League. But nonetheless, I like him. Obviously, Rod didn't have an amazing year in Australia, but he has potential on both ends of the floor, and I think that is just that player type fits into what the modern league is, and that he has more potential than a lot of guys drafted in that range. But obviously, I mean, the big things are George Patterson retaining Robertson at less than like big time starter money. All that is fantastic, and I think this team, you know, could think about it a little bit harder, but I think this team could be, you know, a mid-50s win team next year if their defense lives up to its potential.
I don't think the Suns have won 50 games in the last two years combined. I think they have in the last three combined, and they just didn't do much. I think that was when I'm going through and compiling the added, retained, and lost for all of these teams, and so you're looking at it, and you know, some teams it's this huge turnover and all this kind of stuff, and you look at the Suns, you're like, oh, they used their draft picks, and then they've so far re-signed one of their two prominent free agents. They used the fourth pick in the draft to get Josh Jackson. Then they signed or drafted Devon Reed in the second round, signed Mike James back to the U.S. from Europe, and then they retained Alan Williams. I love that contract, non-guaranteed for the last 2 years, 3 years, $15 million. They cut Leandro Barbosa, and then they haven't signed Alex Len. So I gave them a C-, but I feel like that might have been too generous.
Why are they getting a C-? I gave them a B-. Like, how is this a bad offseason? I think they're better, like, they're better off than they were. They avoided giving out any bad contracts. That I love the way that they have treated Len so far. You know, if he takes the qualifying offer, fine, so be it. But they're not paying him as a sunk cost just because he was the number five pick. He hasn't been that good, so they're not, the market is not there for him, so they're playing hardball with him. Hopefully they won't acquiesce too much, but they're either going to get him on a team friendly contract or make him take the qualifying offer. They're keeping their powder dry, and I think that they, you know, that Williams contract, as you mentioned, is a good one. So what's the problem? Why is this below average to you?
I didn't think they made the best pick at their draft after the slot, and that's very important. Yeah. I mean, then I thought Dennis Smith was better.
Who would you have gone with there?
Dennis.
You would have gone Smith, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best player, and it's not like they have a long-term answer at that position, assuming Eric Bledsoe, you know, is eventually somewhere else, whether that is soon or later. And that's the other thing I didn't like about their offseason. Like, yeah, I'm okay with them not spending all their money. I'm totally cool with that, and I like the way that the Alan Williams contract fits in with that. But they just retained a lot of these other pieces, so they have this incongruous team for the time being. Now, if they resolve that by moving Eric Bledsoe at some other point, so be it. But if they're just kind of going to be a little bit better than bad, that worsens their draft pick. They're not going to be good. So you have those things running together, and they also have an underrated amount of money just on their books long term. I mean, this—it's not like, yeah, oh, this is, you're waiting for this all to wash away. I like Jared Dudley. Jared Dudley's making $9.5 million next year. Tyson Chandler, I don't know how much he has left in the tank. He's making more than $13.5 million next year. This isn't even the coming season. So they're keeping some powder dry, but the powder is complicated. And then, I mean, depending on what happens with TJ Warren, like, I didn't include that in my grade at all because he's extension eligible and he didn't sign an extension, but you know, we'll see what happens there. But I just don't think they have that much flexibility, and Bledsoe, his value could go up depending on what happens in circumstances. And obviously if they play a part in a Kyrie Irving trade.
Well, let me ask you this though. Other than drafting, and I think Jackson still has potential. He could be a quality, sure, player. I agree with you.
Yeah, he wasn't my favorite player, Smith, but he's not bad.
Yeah, I probably would have gotten Smith, Isaac, or even Fox there. I agree. But I think, you know, I think he's going to help them. So that's why I didn't have it as higher. But other than drafting someone else with that pick, what else would you have done differently if you were them?
I think it's hard. Well, so I would have probably moved Bledsoe because at this point, what benefit is he providing to them if you know, he's a good player, obviously, and a lot of that depends on the prices that are out there. You know, like, maybe it's just that nobody wants to give up first round picks for him. That's entirely possible. If that's true, then do that. But I just don't think they were proactive. I mean, some teams were able to extract resources from, like, look at, you know, Brooklyn got, well, I still am getting a handle on how I feel about the Mozgov, D'Angelo Russell trade. At least they got a high ceiling guy for some bad money on the books. And
but here's the thing though, we've been saying for a while, oh, the market's only going to get tighter. Teams are only going to be able to extract more with their unused cap space as time goes on. And so if they were going to do that now, anyone that they took on was going to be a bad contract for beyond this year, most likely. I mean, I don't, you know, if they'd done the McRoberts trade or something, they could have gotten like a second rounder. I don't think that's the sort of move you're talking about. So, I mean, I think to me, I thought they played it exactly right, other than just, you know, the fact that they drafted the guy that I didn't want. But I think think to downgrade
but,
them.
But
at
are
this
they
going
to have money next year? Like there seems to be this. Oh, they're keeping the powder dry. So they like, you know, right now I have it that I'd kind of assuming cap holds for guys like TJ Warren and those sorts of things. They're at about 10. They're at about 10 million, maybe a little bit more, maybe like 11, 12. But remember, they're going to have a high draft.
10. Are you including that? Like they're bringing back Len?
No, that's no money at all for Alex Len.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, if you have Josh Jackson on the books and they have another high draft pick, yeah, they're probably at like $11 million.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they're at that point and most of their money, not all of it, but most of their money is in bad contracts. So, Bledsoe's a good one, obviously, but Knight is
but
basically
all
dead
these
money.
Bad contracts, like, here's the thing. All these bad contracts are, those were signed before. I mean, you can't penalize them.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't think they deserve as much credit for keeping the powder dry because there's just not that much powder. This isn't a circumstance where like some of these other teams like Sacramento, like what they sacrificed, we'll talk about them later, where they were going to have like 40, 45, 50 million in space. Like that's something very different. Like I am fully on board, like with what the Lakers did. Like if you're going to have that much money, all on board, keep it dry. But if it's like $14 million, like you're not going to get a King's ransom for that.
No, you're probably right there, but I still don't see. You still haven't articulated like what they should have done otherwise. I mean, other than
but that's
just, so you're
if,
saying
if,
just
if
take
they do,
on the bad
if they
money
do
now.
Nothing, if the biggest move they did was taking a guy that I didn't think was the best pick available, and the rest of what they did was nothing, then I don't see how that's like above average. Like basically, then you're like, especially when you consider look at how many teams have high grades. I mean, granted, a lot of teams in the East are going to have low grades, but if you were doing a bell curve and the biggest move a team made was a slight negative, then that's not an above average offseason.
Yeah, I think I totally understand that idea, and I think if you want to downgrade them more for Jackson, I'm totally on board there. I have tried to trend a little bit more towards just after summer league not giving a team a bad grade for drafting someone that I don't like, at least when that person has the potential to be pretty good, and I think he's going to be a good player. But also, I think you're underestimating how hard it is to actually just not do anything and not fuck things up when you're in the position that the Suns are in, when they've missed the playoffs for seven years.
It can be hard, but that doesn't mean like, oh, look, you did a great job doing nothing. Like, I especially in their circumstance. Now, but the funny thing is, like, the Suns, because they did so little, where they go from here with the remaining stuff matters a lot. You know, if they can get Alex Len on a super team friendly deal, then that my grade is going to move more quickly. Of course, if they do something in the Kyrie River thing, it's going to move because those teams that do less, the remaining stuff matters more.
All right. Well, if you want to see these Phoenix Suns and get irrefutable proof of whether my B minus or Danny's C minus is the correct grade for their offseason, the best way to do that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find you amazing deals. It's all about saving time, really, right? If you had to go to a bunch of different sites and check them all, maybe you spent 10 minutes, 15 minutes doing that, right? Now you can just look all in one app, find the relevant tickets, and then they rank every ticket based on value. So you can click the best value in the section you want to sit in. Now you spent 2 minutes instead of spending 15 minutes, 20 minutes trying to get your tickets, and you'll save money as well. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence, and not only sports, but also concerts, comedy, theater, basically anything that has a ticket, look for it on SeatGeek. So just download the free SeatGeek app, enter promo code CAPSPACE today. That CAPSPACE code, very easy to remember, of course. It's even on the back of our t-shirts now. That's promo code CAPSPACE for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Oh, and also, before we get to Portland, I should remind you that Dunked On hats are available as well at NateDuncanNBA.com. Click on the merchandise tab in the upper right, and they're $30. They actually wanted to sell them for $35, and I said, no way, that's too expensive. We need to do better by our listeners and sell them for a more reasonable price. So $30 it is. Hopefully you'll find that reasonable. We also, of course, have the t-shirts and mugs available as well. Those 16-ounce coffee mugs get you through an entire mock off season episode. All right, where are we at with the Portland Trailblazers?
I was trying to imagine what this would have been if they hadn't done the Allen Crabb trade. Would have been like,
yes.
They picked guys, and then they basically they let Festus Ezeli and Tim Quarterman.
That's a
go.
Good question. What would your grade have been? Well, tell me what your grade is, and tell me what it would have been without the Crabb trade.
It's a B plus now. Without the Crabb trade, it would have probably been like a C.
Interesting. Okay, I was surprised. I would have thought you would be harsher on them. I had a C plus with the Crabb trade. I probably would have been like a D without it.
Well, so I get I. it's funny you talked about the idea of with the Suns, we argued about the merits of doing nothing. And I felt like Paul Allen, largely in the early part of the offseason, taking his medicine and just kind of not giving up resources to keep the team together that they had foolhardily spent too much money on. I kind of admired that in a weird degree. They ended up burning some of that by virtue of the Allen Crabtree, but I thought the Allen Crabtree was a really good one because they unloaded a lot of money that wasn't providing much value for them, and the ability to stretch Andrew Nicholson, you know, made it an even larger savings. And my biggest criticism with what they did is not that they drafted bad players. I'm not as familiar with Zach Collins, so I can't say he's great or he's bad or anything like that. I wasn't super impressed with him in summer league. I was more impressed with
Caleb Swanigan. They drafted like bad players in theory, though, like that.
Yeah, and that's where I was getting. That was where I was getting into is that they didn't. Yeah. So I ripped on New Orleans for not doing a good job of fixing their greatest weakness, and Portland did a worse job of that and actually exacerbated it because the forward spots are just this problem area for a team that has one of the best backcourts in the entire league, and that Nurkic, when he played, was inspiring last year. So you sit there and you go, okay, well, if you were to tell me that they were going to keep, that they weren't going to use any of their assets to dump guys, I'd be like, oh, okay, so they drafted a few swingmen because they originally had three late first round picks. Nope, they moved up two of them to get a guy who's probably more of a center than a power forward, so then that doesn't really resolve the issue. And then Caleb Swanigan is, you know, he's a big, I haven't figured out exactly what kind of big he is. So they didn't throw anything at that problem. And that is not great, but like if the money part of it was a constraint, they shed a lot of it in a very good trade. And I don't think Collins is a bad player. And it seems like the people who know him better think it's a reasonable value. So I'm going to knock that, but not knock it too hard.
You're right. I think the big problem still is getting better defensively for them. And Zach Collins, Caleb Swanigan, getting someone even, again, this is similar to Denver. I would have liked for them to have someone in the pipeline here. Even just, I mean, the other disappointment too is just the fact that they weren't able to even like make any kind of a minimum signing. If they were going to move Crab, you would imagine, I guess because Brooklyn was stuck with the Porter contract, that Crab trade maybe wasn't in the pipeline, although they obviously consummated it after the year expiration date for when he had signed that offer sheet with the Nets, because he can't be traded to the Nets until a year has gone by. But it would have been nice for them to just get someone who could be some more experience, even the return of someone like Gerald Henderson. I think it could have helped them. Someone like that who can be more of a defensive type stopper on the wing, give them an option for when Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless just can't make a shot on the wing as well. I think that would have helped a lot.
Something else that I wanted to bring up, and I hadn't thought about this till I really went through their roster. After the Crab trade, their guard depth is pretty scary. Like they, you know, when you have Dame and CJ, if those guys are healthy and playing, it's not as much of a problem. But if either one of those guys misses time, they don't have anything. Like, yeah, maybe you slide Evan Turner, but you don't have forward depth anyway. So
they don't have any other shooters really at all on this team outside of Dame and CJ. Like, those are the only guys who can make a three now at an above average rate. I mean, between Turner, Aminu, and Harkless, I mean, you've got a bunch of guys who are like 32% three-point shooters, though Harkless is a 35% three-point shooter because he didn't shoot at all and got that bonus last year. But
I realize now I had it as a B, moved it up to a B plus right before we started recording, and then now I'm going to move it back to a B just because that's a pretty big flaw. And they have other talented guys, but there isn't a market for it. You know, like Noah Vonleh, I'd say that he's you'd rather have him than not on a lot of teams, just because 1 year
they have cheap, so many bigs.
It's Ed ridiculous. Davis, same type of thing. But who the hell is going to trade a perimeter player for those guys right now?
No, of course not. And I mean, to draft two more bigs, neither of whom really, I mean, I guess they project to maybe have some stretchability, but you know, neither of them is really a center either. They already have Nurkic, who they're going to have to make a big investment in as well. And maybe you think, okay, you know they still have Myers Leonard making $10 million a year to probably not do anything on the team this season. So yeah, I really would have liked for them to just get someone, I mean, that like who could be a two guard, hit some threes alongside Dame or CJ off the bench. I mean, Allen Crabb played 28 minutes a game last year, you know, and while he was inadequate defensively, there's a reason that he played so much. He even closed some games over the last couple of years because they just needed some more shooting on the floor. And now it's just, you know, Evan Turner is going to play a ton. He's going to be overstretched. But you know, that Crab trade was good, don't get me wrong. And maybe, you know, on the buyout market or by making some trades, they can do better. I mean, I also might have liked to have seen them I mean, just in terms of like value, 15 and 20 for 10, those trades generally have not worked out as well. So it would have been nice to get some more bites at the apple instead, maybe of going for Collins, who I just, again, like was considered to be the 10th best prospect in the draft by most people. But I just don't see the fit for him generally or specifically with this squad.
Donovan Mitchell, who I was not familiar with in the draft, but he would have been so awesome as like the third guard on that team.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. I went C plus just because that Crab trade I thought was really good. But the rest of it, and Colin Swalgan, maybe they'll be okay players. And maybe you say, hey, you know what, you're drafting at this range, just get someone who you think you can play, and don't worry about the fit. Don't worry about the fit in the modern NBA. So we could end up being wrong about those guys. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, so here's a question: you think they're better or worse next year?
Worse,
even though they have Nurkic for the whole year.
I think they're better. I think they're. Oh, you mean like just overall record?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they'll be better because Nurkic was a meaningful upgrade for them, and you assume he'll play more games next year than he did last year.
Yeah. Although they did have Plumlee for a large part of the as well. He wasn't, yeah. I didn't like him, but he wasn't, you know, I don't know if
Nurkic, I mean, the Nurkic Plumlee upgrade is not, you know, it's not a life-changing thing, but it is an upgrade.
So the Kings, I went with a straight C for them. They actually recently became known, just hired Brandon Williams from formerly with the league, and then he was working with the Sixers. They hired him to be an assistant GM. They both hired and then immediately lost Scott Perry after, and everyone was like, oh, this, they had this great offseason. I didn't agree, obviously. I gave them a C. I think that from a value standpoint in the draft, they did well. I probably would have preferred Smith over Fox. I think they're going almost too far in the direction of this like culture and character stuff now. Whereas, I mean, they've got a lot of these guys already. I mean, and then they signed all these guys like George Hill and Vince Carter and Zach Randolph, who are going to help like change the culture. And Dave Yeager, I'm sure, had a major part in that as well, having coached those guys in Memphis, and they're going to buy into him. But, you know, De'Aaron Fox is already a great character guy on his own. Buddy Hield is supposed to be this great character guy as well. I mean, they don't really, Garrett Temple is supposed to be that as well. They don't really have anyone on this team anymore who's like considered like a bad egg at all. Like Scal isn't like some big leader, but he's, you know, supposed to be a great kid also. So this idea, all right, we got to continue like changing the culture, I think they did enough there. I think Smith to me is better than Fox. They should have drafted him, but Fox I think will be good. You know, I think of that as just sort of like, you know, they got the guy who was there, who was they got kind of who they're supposed to get around that range. So even if there's better players behind them, and we can't be entirely prescient on that either, maybe they could have gotten Jonathan Isaac there as well, could have been in contention in addition to Smith. But yeah, then the George Hill contract, I understood to some degree, although you supposedly are trying to give the keys to De'Aaron Fox, but it didn't make sense to me, the timing on making these moves. I mean, the Carter contract, that's just an insane amount for him. Zach Randolph, that's a lot of money for him. You've got these young centers, Scal in particular, who you're really trying to develop. Now Randolph's totally going to be blocking all of them. Big overpay for him, $12 million a year. But to me, it was just like, hey, how about you take your lumps this year? Let's see which of these young guys can develop. You know, you've added another couple of draft picks. They got Bogdan Bogdanovich, who I think they probably maybe gave a little too much money to as well. But take your lumps this year, and then when you don't have your draft pick next year, then you make all these vet signings.
The opportunity cost of what they chose to do is immense, because they have about $40 million committed for 2018-19. To Hill, Randolph, and Bogdanovich. Now, two of those three guys can probably like play and be a part of what they're doing, and Zebo, you know, he can contribute in a different way, but very few teams are going to have space, and I don't think they were going to get a max guy out of that, but they could have extracted some serious resources from other teams. And what they chose to spend a lot more money for veterans who could play, when just getting veterans would have been fine. Like Mike Miller last year made like $3.5 million. He was a good vet for the Nuggets to have. The Kings possess so many guys on contracts that they actually want to give playing time to. Cauley Stein, maybe Papianis, Scal, Dow, De'Aaron Fox, and Frank Mason, and Justin Jackson.
Kufos is still on this team. When's the last time we even thought of him?
Yeah, like so, and Garrett Temple's a solid vet. Like they have all this stuff. And so you're sitting there going, yeah, if you want to add vets, you can add vets. But don't add expensive vets, because you being a little bit better actually is worse for them long term, because it weakens their draft pick the year that they have it. And they're not going to make the playoffs. Like they're not going to be in that mix. And so the costs of this are huge. And as you said, if they had done this a year later, they would have had a better draft pick. I think there's going to be less money out there next year, so they could use that to extract more resources. And you can get veteran leadership in case they really needed more of that. And there aren't really that many bad apples on this team. It's not like you're trying to counteract anything. It's just like the toxicity of your overall team culture. Like, that's really what you're trying to do. And yeah. I don't think they're going to be winning enough to do the part of that that winning cures. Like, there is a part of it that, you know, that being terrible for a while and then being better, you know, just changes your rep around the league. And I agree with that. We're seeing it with the Sixers, but they're still going to be probably one of the three worst teams in the West. So yes, they will be better, and that's nice, but it's not like this is some great disinfectant that's coming on them.
Yeah, and they could have even just given Darren Collison a similar contract to what Hill ended up getting. And Hill, frankly, didn't have any kind of a market elsewhere either. Like, I don't even know why they needed to pay him this much.
And
I'm downgrading them
hurt,
from a C to a C minus.
And remember that if he gets hurt, then the idea of surplus value or the idea of moving him next summer gets completely screwed. Because that was a part of it. And I think that was a good case that you made in terms of the long-term thing of, instead of trading into cap space, trading for a guy who can actually contribute. I think that's a very good way of thinking about where this might be going. But his value could definitely start flatlining if, you know, if he misses another 20 to 25 games this year. A team's just going to be sitting there going, well, crap, yeah, he's a good player, and when he's healthy, he's on there, but we're not going to consider him as big of an asset as maybe Sacramento does.
What'd you think of Justin Jackson and Harry Giles with 15 and 20?
I mean, actually, so Justin Jackson fits in with kind of my low ceiling criticism of this team, that it's just, he's just kind of there, like a player who can contribute, but I don't see, you know, like starter on a good team in him. I see contributor, which is fine. And at 15, you're not expecting a starter. Giles is a straight ceiling play, and I don't feel comfortable talking too much about it because I don't know his medicals. But if the stuff is in there that concerned a lot of teams to like maybe even take him off their board, if that stuff is legitimate, then taking him at 20 is a really big risk because there were other contributors on the board.
Yeah, and obviously he's another big man as well. Yeah.
I mean, I love Giles if he's healthy. Like, if he's healthy, he's one of my favorite guys in this draft.
Yeah, and I think that's a reasonable. I mean, he didn't play summer league, which is concerning. You wouldn't think that there'd be. I mean, he played last year at Duke, so why isn't he playing summer league? Like, that's like, is he like not ready, or his knees still like that bad? I mean, he was theoretically working out for people, so I didn't really ever hear a story. Did they give an explanation of why he didn't play?
I never heard one, but I'm guessing they made some sort of thing. Like, the word I've heard is that they have a plan for what they're going to do with him, but they haven't made that public.
Yeah, they just said they're just being cautious with his knees, is what Divot said. I downgrade. I'm going with a C minus, and just because I think Fox will be a quality player, and trading 10 for 15 and 20 just in a vacuum, I think is good value. I don't know if the players are right, but I don't think that Zach Collins was like some great guy for them either. And Kennard and Mitchell, they had a bunch of twos, so they weren't going to take those guys, although perhaps that shows the fallacy of that thinking. And we'll see what happens with Bogdanovich. I know Aaron Jackson liked him. He said he would defend better than people thought he would, so maybe he'll end up being worth that contract as well. But yeah, I really, especially the Randolph and Carter signings, I just completely didn't understand at all. Let's get to San Antonio. It was definitely a disappointing offseason. I gave them a D, and I thought that John Simmons, for whatever reason, you lost him. Maybe he was complaining, he didn't want to be there, or whatever. You still lost the guy, and they had restricted rights on him. They could have brought him back. I mean, I think he is probably the best player of anyone coming or going for them this year, especially when you talk about who their competition is in the Western Conference, Houston and Golden State.
I gave them a D minus. I expected you to grade them more highly, I think, because I don't know. So for me, the Simmons part of it is bad, but the other two elements of this going, the years not dollars for Patty Mills, you know, that amount of money per season is not bad, $12 million or so. He turns 29 this summer, so that gets sticky as you get longer into this. I mean, he's a backup point guard now,
and we saw too, like I made that observation in my notes too, that like if they had waited him out, because remember they agreed to that very early, if they had waited him out, they might have been able to get him for less or gotten him on a three-year deal. But I think they really just were not willing to. I mean, it definitely seemed like they operated this whole summer, even after the Paul trade, like they had like some big plans and they were going to get someone, and because they agreed quickly with Mills so they could utilize his low cap hold. They got Gasol to opt out, and it was like they're operating like, yeah, we're going to get someone who's really going to change our fortunes and use cap space. And then they just, you know, it was Rudy Gay for the MLE.
And then I hate the Pau Gasol contract. He's 37 years old. Doesn't make much sense for a team that's competing for a
$6 million guaranteed. $6 million guaranteed in the final year too. Zach Lowe just reported that we didn't have that yet. Like that's crazy. 3 years, $48 million. I mean, he was only due $16 million this year. Like I get you have to make him whole if he opts out as part of this scheme, but like you know, you don't have to like double what he was going to get before.
And as an older guy, you know, those later years become a bigger deal. It's going to be if they end up getting somebody with that space and they need to clear a little bit more, I don't think other teams are going to see that as an asset. And not only did they lose Jonathan Simmons, they also lost Dwayne Dedmon, and those guys reduced their defensive versatility, they reduced their athleticism, and Rudy Gay could help. Rudy Gay also turns 31 later this summer and is coming off an Achilles injury. So if that's really where you're going to get your jolt of energy, it's a big concern. And Derek White, I didn't know much about him going into summer league. I mean, I knew his story from Colorado and I'd watched him a little bit and he was intriguing, but he seems like another kind of low upside play. You know, maybe he's going to be a rotation player, something like that. And San Antonio does not have so much high end talent outside of Kawhi now where they can just take these like trying to swing for a double type things in the draft. Like, yeah, it's true that those guys are valuable moving forward, but after a couple of years of Kyle Anderson type guys, it's getting harder to keep doing that.
Yeah. Brandon Paul, maybe someone who can help them. He signed on for the minimum for a couple of years. We don't know whether they're going to bring back David Lee. They at least got Manu Ginobili to come back for presumably the minimum after they gave him that balloon payment last year. But man, I mean, I go back to that Gasol contract where it's just like, if that was really the price to get him to opt out and you didn't have a damn good idea that Chris Paul was going and you weren't willing to move on from Parker. I mean, that was another thing too. I mean, that's, you can say what you want to about their culture and all that, but Tony Parker is someone who is making $50 million a year and he's basically dead salary, and they're going to go ahead and let him expire rather than move him or stretch him or something like that. Again, it's not clear who exactly could have come there, but to get no real help on the wings. I like the Gay idea, but he can't really defend. I mean, I think Simmons will help them more. Generally, they have Kawhi to play the four, but they're probably still not going to play that way. Maybe if you're going to play Gay and Kawhi together, you really probably almost have to play smaller, which helps, but they lost Dedmon. They don't really have a good defensive option at center any longer now.
Wait, Joffrey LeVern's not going to fix their defensive issues at center?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so
I feel like that's the reason I gave them a minus and you didn't, is just because Joffrey LeVern.
I mean, at the minimum, he's played NBA minutes before as a fifth big. Like, it's fine for the minimum. It's going to really piss you off even more when, like, they rest guys and play him regularly and, like, still win games.
Well, I mean, they can do that. And I also want to see kind of how they handle the bottom part of their roster, because, you know, they have a lot of, I think they have like 15 or 16 guys committed to. I always assumed that one of those spots was going to go to David Lee. Maybe that's not going to happen now. And I feel like Lee to LeVern is a downgrade as well.
Yeah, that's probably right. And Gay as well. I mean, like, there's a 50% chance that he could just, like, not help them at all, and then he opts into that $8 million.
Well, yeah, that player option, like, I have it in there. It's like, the player option is riskier than I think has been discussed by most people, and it's all downside risk. You know, like, that's the way player options are. You know, if it works out well, then it's a one-year deal, and he's gone, and all that. And if it works out badly, then you're like, crap, we have this extra $8 million on our books.
Yeah,
$9 million.
And there's a lot of danger. If Aldridge opts in, if Gay opts in, you know, they're basically out of functional space at that point, and that could be a major impediment. They also have Danny Green becoming a free agent next year, and I thought that they accomplished neither of their goals. One of them was just to get way better this year. They didn't do that, and the other one would be, all right, let's maintain some space for 2018 when no one has it. We still have a superstar in Kawhi Leonard, and we could just put in a ton of stuff around him with, you know, maybe even close to double max space, and now that's no longer possible either. It seems like with the addition of Mills, Gasol, and possibly Gay in long-term money, that's another $36 million in long-term money. And then if you got Aldridge potentially opting in as well, you know, there goes all your cap space for next year. And now Kawhi Leonard's getting up there in age as well. He's going to opt out. He'll have a bigger cap hold in 2019. So filling in around him in 2019 will be more difficult. They may have really just retain these guys, and it's kind of like, for what? You know, you're going to be worse this year, likely, to me, and a loss of flexibility going forward.
And I think it's less likely that LaMarcus opts in, but even, you know, like Danny Green. So you're sitting there, he's probably going to opt
out. I don't
up.
Know, man. $22.3 million, you think he can get that?
Well, I think he'll get less in annual value, but get longer duration and go somewhere where he thinks he can be featured more, something in that realm. But you're right that it's a possibility we should discuss more. But like, let's say Danny Green. Okay, Danny Green, player option, $10 million. I think that he'll opt out and get more money for more years. But so if that's the case, then that you lose flexibility in 2019. And his cap hold is only, I think it's going to be $15 million. So like, that's not small potatoes. Like, that's a meaningful amount of money. And you're probably not going to get him for less than that or much less than that. So yeah, it's they're in this challenge. And they're spending a max slot for next year on Pau Gasol and Patty Mills. Those guys are combining for $28 million. That's bad.
Yeah, and you would have hoped maybe that like someone more dynamic at point guard, they could have gotten them as well. I mean, even if they ended up having to sign that George Hill contract, I would have rather let Mills go, sign Hill to the same contract he got with Sacramento, and then hopefully, you know, maybe even not have Gay or somehow get Gasol to take less than, you know, an additional $38 million in guaranteed money. And they could have gone in that direction, perhaps, and said, yeah, they couldn't have signed Gay if they had gotten Hill, because that would have meant that they would have had to use cap space, and so they would have been limited to the room mid level. Anyway, I wanted them to get better at point guard or get better on the wing. They didn't, and they kind of got worse just about everywhere else. Let's get to Utah. They traded for Ricky Rubio, giving up a lottery protected 2018 OKC first, which actually is not going to be that good of a pick now after their improvements. They made that trade for Donovan Mitchell, giving up Tyler Lydon and Trey Lyles. They also signed Thabo Sefolosha to $5 million a year for 2 years, second year non-guaranteed. Jerebko is $4 million a year for 2 years, second year non-guaranteed. Epi Udo, $3 million a year for 2 years, last year non-guaranteed on all those. And they drafted Tony Bradley at 28 after trading 30 and 42 for him. And then of course they lost Gordon Hayward and George Hill. They waived Boris Diaw, who is due $7.5 million.
And then the other thing they did is they retained Joe Ingles. And
yes.
And he got...
Yeah, and 4 for $52 million, which is... that's a little exorbitant for the 29-year-old. But that was back in the days when they were trying to retain Hayward. This is another one of those ones where it's like, all right, they lost Hayward. That sucked. They made two moves, Rubio and Ingles, that in part were designed to appease Hayward. They didn't get him. But if you accept the reality that they had to do everything they could to retain Hayward and then that they couldn't do it, I think they did pretty well. I ended up giving them a B.
I gave them an A minus. And a big part of why is that I think a lot of the moves they made work for this team, even if Hayward was going to leave. I mean, they have Rudy Gobert. Gobert is a wonderful player. I don't think they were ever going to be like if they lost Hayward and Rodney Hood, they have a lot of good players. Like, this was a legitimate I think they would have been a top four team in the West if they had been healthier than they were. They were the fifth seed and then won in the first round and then went to the second, partially because the Clippers had some injuries. Anyway, the guys they added, they're talented players on reasonable contracts. Rubio, 2 years, reasonable. Mitchell, I think, was a very good draft pick, and going up, I like Trey Lyles a lot less than you do, but that being the sacrifice to significantly upgrade your draft pick was huge. Thabo, Jerebko, rotation players, exceedingly team-friendly contracts. Udo, you know, more of a reach, but still potentially talented, defensively versatile. And I didn't love Tony Bradley, but that's not bad. And so they didn't sacrifice much. As you said, the OKC pick isn't that good, and they should be able to... I've started looking into this a little bit. They should be able to duck the tax next year, even if they bring back Hood and Favors at the numbers I expect them to get. And both of those guys, you know, Favors can leave of his own volition. He's unrestricted. Hood is not. Like, both those guys could end up having their markets get depressed just because there's no money out there. And I think this team is pretty good.
They have depth at every position that's pretty significant. Even Raul Neto is an excellent third string point guard, for instance. And even at the four, you know, they'll probably play Joe Johnson there. They've got Favors at the five. They can slide Favors over there. They've got Udo is perfectly good as a third center. Jerebko gives them a shooting switching option at the four. as well. Cephalosha, probably the best defender that they've had on the wing in Utah since basically, God, I can't even remember when they've had.
When Rajah Bell was actually better.
Yeah. And even Rajah was shorter. I think Cephalosha, if healthy, it could get there. Obviously, they're going to have to grind out points with Rubio, Cephalosha, if he's going to playing two bigs together. But I still think they've got a lot of talent on this team. They can outwork teams. They can out-execute them. They can have a top
five defense. They're not going to outscore them.
Still. Well, it's still outscoring if you win 90-85. So.
That's true.
The Tony Bradley trade was weird to me. Why they couldn't have just waited to get him at 30. The Lakers, who are at 28, weren't going to take him. They already had Zubac. And so they basically just thought, I guess Dennis Lindsay, because he used to work for the Spurs, thought that like they were going to take him instead. I didn't really think that like Tony Bradley's like, oh man, we got to move up and get this guy. But maybe they felt like they didn't have the roster spot for another guy in the second round anyway. So might as well just go grab him. But another guy whose fit I don't particularly care for. And it's not really, doesn't really seem like a modern player, even though he showed a few things that, as we talked about in summer league. So yeah, I gave him a B, you gave him an A minus. And I guess that'll do it here for today's show. Don't forget about our sponsor, Audible. Audible.com/capspace is the URL to get a free audiobook and get started with them. And also don't forget about our merchandise. We got hats available now. You can let the cap knowledge diffuse from the hat directly into your brain. Just put it on and you'll instantly become an NBA cap expert. Not really. And also the t-shirts and mugs. We got plenty of those as well. NateDuncanNBA.com. Click on that merchandise link in the upper right. Anything you need to say before we go?
I'll say two things. One that just popped on the screen is that it's a first metacarpal fracture for Danilo Gallinari, who got in a little bit of a tussle during a game, and that, you know, we'll see how that factors. The Clippers are very familiar with players breaking their hands in issues, so they'll have to deal with that. And then on a personal level, I did Tears podcast for Real GM Radio with Adi Joseph for the Win. We did the East more recently, and then we did the West last week. You can listen to both those. They hold up fine. I mean, not much has really happened other than the Allen Crabbe trade. And then I'll have material coming out for the Athletic SF launch. And yeah, you can pre-order my book if you want. It's not coming out until November 1st, but I'm putting the kind of the final touches on it this weekend and this upcoming week.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back middle of this week with our Eastern Conference grades. And also, finally, we'll have that mailbag coming at some point, no later than tomorrow night for Patreon subscribers. Talk to y'all then.